What we're doing in the present class is concentrating on surely the outstanding leader of the Catholic, as we popularly called it, Counter-Reformation, or better simply, Catholic Reformation. The Church of the 16th century desperately needed reform. The Church of the 20th century desperately needs reform. It was Ignatius Loyola. All I had to do in the next 50 or so minutes is cover the main aspects, not so much of Ignatius' own life and achievement, which you have in front of you, as how in God's providence God used Ignatius to meet the very challenges which Protestantism raised. In other words, the very errors created by Protestantism were the ones that needed to be answered. The right side, just a word. He found the Society of Jesus born the year before the discovery of America and died in 1556. He was therefore, Ignatius was a contemporary of Martin Luther. Ignatius founded the Society of Jesus, and that it, then, the Society, for four centuries, has been the spearhead in reforming the Church. We so desperately needed Reformation, and still need it today. In many ways, the heart of Ignatian Reformation was the spiritual exercises which he spent a lifetime writing, although their substance was finished already by the time of his conversion in 1521. Even as we're talking about Ignatius having written the spiritual exercises, and those exercises were the main instrument that God used then to reform the Church in his day, so the spiritual exercises are to be used in our day for the reformation of the Church today. 10 years ago, I would not have spoken as confidently as I can now. I found out in Washington, D.C. that lay people who are, I believe, under the inspiration of a special guidance of the Holy Spirit, being prepared by the Holy Spirit to take leadership positions in the Church today to reform the Church of God. They need to be powerfully both motivated and properly trained. The principal means for both the motivation and the fundamental training is the spiritual exercises. 25 years ago, I would never have dreamt this was even possible. I didn't have to go to find anybody. They looked me up. And I was called from Detroit to Washington. Had two groups in Washington. One of 35, one of 25 lay people. Most of them professional people working for the federal government, leaders in politics, in various professions, who wanted to make a 30-day spiritual exercises, which I commend to all of you. And they called me in. I spent just the late afternoon and evening. Spent 2 hours in talking to these people. Next morning, to the next flight, back to Detroit. In the meantime, they had already planned, had lay people within the group who were leaders, who found priests to give them a certain amount of guidance, hear their confessions, and provide them with some spiritual direction. Then, two groups on the West Coast. The first group was 90 lay people. All signed up for a 30-day retreat. This time I found 7 of my own fellow Jesuits at Seattle University. Same thing. The priest agreed to provide counsel and direction to these lay people. Another group, and both on the East and the West Coast. Meet them also, people in different parts of the country. So much so that then, what I would never have thought of doing, I wrote a book called A Retreat with the Lord to give the people, well, a kind of a roadmap for making the spiritual exercises. That's on the right side of your outline. Now the distinctive features first of all, there are 7 vows which St. Ignatius prescribed for his followers. And all Jesuits have to take all 7. Only those who take what we call solemn vows. There are the 3 basic vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience. Then 4 other vows. The 4th vow being obedience to the Vicar of Christ. Especially obedience in the teaching of religion to children. That's my vow. As I went to Albania. And about a month ago, I got a call from Australia. Would I please come for a month, mid-June to mid-July of next year, and spend a month in Australia training the missionaries of charity there. So they in turn can train catechists who then will teach children in Calcutta. Unheard of before. The missions of charity alone are training 40,000 children in Calcutta. Among the distinctive features of the Jesuit order is the manifestation of conscience that we're obliged to make on entering the order and every year, a manifestation of conscience as we would make a confession. But the superior is not bound by the seal of confession. And one reason for that manifestation of conscience, as Ignatius realized, is that the people who join the order should manifest their interior life. Otherwise, how can the superior know whom he's dealing with? Again, there are no temporary vows in the Society of Jesus. Our first vows after 2 years in the novitiate are already permanent vows. And long years of training. In my case, 17 years from the time of entering to the time of my final vows. 17 years. Now the doctrinal stress. Every major error of Protestantism, St. Ignatius, met by a corresponding emphasis in the Society of Jesus. First, human freedom in response to God's grace. Martin Luther, as we know, denied, as did every single one of the major so-called reformers, everyone denied human freedom. Ignatius insisted on human freedom as the single greatest gift that God gave us. Secondly, Christ is the model, the exemplar of sanctity. But then you have to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God who became man precisely that by his practice of human virtues he might show us how we ought to live our lives. As I think I said already in our last class, 6 of Martin Luther's books and manuscript will never be published. Unpublished now for over 400 years, because the Christ of Martin Luther, though he gave lip service to Christ's divinity, the Christ of Martin Luther, hear it, was a sinner. And if there is a best kept secret in Protestantism, I don't believe there will be a Protestant left in the world who is sane and sober. I mean it. Who knew the real Martin Luther. Not one. The Christ of Luther was a historian Christ who was a human person who sinned. And of course, all kinds of pious blasphemy. By the way, the worst kind of blasphemy is pious blasphemy. Thirdly, the church has a civil society with divinely established authority. There is nothing in Catholic teaching which is more openly in contradiction to the any of the word reformers. My friends, I've got to speak English, and believe me, it's not because it's the only language I know. In Albania, I spoke, of course, to the sisters in English, and I asked the sisters, how many of you spoke English at home? Not one hand went up. How many of you spoke another language at home? Heavy hand went up. Mine went real high. Only in eternity will we know how anti-Catholic, I mean every syllable of my statement, how anti-Catholic the English language is. From grammar school days. Tennyson, Byron, Wordsworth, one heretic after another. Sometimes people ask, well, why do you talk English? That's what you think about English. Because you don't know any other language, that's why. The church has zero authority in Protestantism. Zero. Except, of course, the local minister. Well, takes on a certain amount of authority. But that's not the church. If you don't know what he's teaching, start a church of your own. Four. Primacy of the Bishop of Rome. The scathing, bitter, vitriolic books written, especially Martin Luther, against the papacy. Exhausted both the German and the Latin vocabulary, if our Latin is not to have enough profanity, so that they resorted to German. And, by the way, speaking of Albania, which we talked about at the beginning of our classes today, the Pope is hated in Albania. And whatever we can do, this is, well, my love obedience to the Bishop of Rome. mean so much. Because I know how extreme is the opposition to the Bishop of Rome in so many circles, including our own America, and especially the most bitter enemies of the papacy, our ex-Catholics, and the worst, our ex-priests, and the very worst, our ex-bishops. Number five, this is St. Ignatius. The Blessed Virgin Mary is the mediatrix of grace with Christ. Of course, Christ is the source of the grace. But she, his mother, except for her, we wouldn't have him. And then, as he declared on the cross, she was chosen by him on Calvary as the spiritual mother of the human race. My first book I've ever published was on Protestantism until the Catechism of the Catholic Church was published. That first book was my bestseller. Sold around 250,000 copies. And of course I had to buy all kinds of Protestant books from Protestant bookstores, including a big, thick Lutheran hymnal, 400 Lutheran hymns, you name it. And when I hear in Catholic churches Lutheran hymns sung, I writhe with pain. I writhe with pain. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Out of 400 hymns, not one line to Our Lady. Zero. Number six, systematic pursuit of sanctity. That's Ignatius. Systematic pursuit of sanctity. And what I'm doing, of course, is pointing out how Ignatius was the very antithesis of the Protestantism, which he was chosen by God to somehow, well, challenge and reform. In Protestantism, there is not only no systematic pursuit of sanctity, there is no sanctity. Zero. Because, and hear it, sanctity is doing more than you're obliged to. To do what God commands, that is morality. To go beyond the precepts of the commandments of God is spirituality or the pursuit of sanctity. Well, again, in the so-called reformers, anyone who claims that he or she can go beyond what we're all obliged to do is blaspheming. Why? Because we're all sinners. We're not capable of doing any good. Whatever good anyone does is done solely and exclusively by the grace of God. And that is why now this month, as you know, and pray earnestly, pray for the synod taking place in Rome this month on religious life. The first such synod in the history of the church, never before. Our bishops from all over the world have been summoned by the Holy Father to discuss what can be done, to save religious life in countries like the United States. 90,000 religious women in the United States lost to religious life, says the council. I think I should say this, if I haven't already. The IHMs, Monroe, Michigan, within less than an hour's drive of here, in 1 year, they wrote to Cardinal Dearden, told him the following list of 31 parish schools we are leaving, we are not coming back. The miracle is the faith has survived. And the marvel is it took that long for the 42 parishes to close. Feminism in the Western world began with the deluded nuns. Period. Better exclamation mark. How well I know. How painfully well I know. Number 7. Human mediation of grace. That. In the vocabulary of St. Ignatius, that is the apostolate. What does it mean to engage in apostolic work? Ignatius has a very simple but profound definition. To engage in apostolic work means to be a channel of grace to others. And that, my friends, is our principal task in life. In fact, our own salvation depends on it. You might say correctly that our main personal task is to save our own souls. Correct. But how do we save our own souls? By being channels of grace to others. And we'll be only as effective channels of grace to others as we are united with God ourselves. My friends, this is not a Sunday afternoon academic reverie. Today's Mass I offered one of my former students, a Jesuit, who just passed away. We are born, we live, and we die But what a difference. And our soul goes when our bodies die. And our souls will go to heaven on one condition. That we have been instruments, channels of grace to everyone whom God put into our lives. The main role of parents, it is not to bring children into this world. You don't even have to marry, right? Sadly. And that works both ways. That's why I decided I would not marry. To bring people into heaven? Gosh, I was 22 when I found that out. I don't have to marry. I have something new. And we're going to be only as effective as we ourselves are close to God. Nobody. Nobody cheats here. Nobody. Giving speeches, writing books, B-A-H, bah. All that matters is that God uses us to give His grace to those He puts into our lives for that purpose. Number 8. Obedience, this is Ignatius, is the foundation of the spiritual life. I learned that very soon. I had to. Otherwise, as my novice master told me, after I was in the novitiate 3 months, and I was just being myself, he called me in. I've said this story so many times, you may be bored in hearing it again. What was wrong with you? Gosh, I must have some faults. You are an intellectual bully. Either get some humility or out. Obedience. And that means obeying some very human superiors. And superiors can be very human. After you have them in class, you examine them. You know what grades they've got. And he's my superior. What are you talking about? Well, that's the way it is. Then, number 9. Strange teaching of St. Ignatius. Grace has invitation to freedom. Oh, this needs to be learned in today's enslaved society. In other words, God gives us His grace to free us. Free us from what? From the enslavement of our own passions. And there's no slavery worse, believe me, than being enslaved by one's own uncontrolled desires. Give me a prison cell any day. Compared to not being able to control either my desires or what comes to the same thing, my fears. That with God's grace, I may want, with all my heart, I may want something, but grace is calling me in another direction. Thanks. I jump in. And the beauty is that once we embrace the will of God, then and only then are we really, really freed. In the vocabulary of St. Ignatius, slavery means to be controlled by the desires over which I have no mastery. Forty-seven years in the priesthood. I met leaders in society, political giants, multimillionaires, but enslaved because they are not mastered what God's grace He has given to us to free us from tyranny, the tyranny of the world, the flesh, and the devil. Finally, sanctity as channel of grace. What are we saying here? It is a further exposition of what we had above regarding the apostolate. Number 7 and number 10 go together. I will say it. I'll finish the sentences. We'll have our question period. We'll say a prayer. Then we'll go home. But what a difference. We've been grasping. This is now number 10. The most important thing in the world, and this is Simon Fuhr, Ignatian spirituality. Our most important task in life is to become saints. And that is not a hyperbole. What are we saying? Our most important task in life is to be so closely united with God that our one desire is to do the will of God, and that among the dozen or so standard definitions of sanctity that I've used over the years is my favorite. Sanctity is having only one desire in life, to do the will of God. Because then, Yahweh use us. He will use us to work miracles. I'm not exaggerating. He will use us to work miracles. And of course, it means that each one of us daily, that too is St. Ignatius, daily examines our conscience and asks ourselves, or ask the Lord, today, how faithful have I been in doing God's will? And then I examine, what did I do that I should have done? What did I fail to do? What might I have done better? And this is Ignatius. To his dying day, he kept a record. And with this, we will close this class. Ignatius advised his followers, and I advise you, keep a written record, of your spiritual life. Daily. I know people. I knew a relative of mine who was manager of a Pizza Hut. I know people in business. I visited persons who run corporations. All I know is that you have to keep a record. That makes sense. You've got to keep a record. And this is the most important business in the world. By writing, and as I mentioned this more than once, I wouldn't dare even bring this up, let alone spend time on it, unless I were doing it myself. Every day, at first may feel like a child. So what? Weren't we told today to become like little children? Was it today? Was it?
Yes.
And yesterday's gospel for the little flower, were we also told to grow up spiritually? In other words, if we are to be the channels of grace to others, we must see how well we're doing or how poorly. Has God's mercy if we've not done well. And I tell people when I'm alone, look around, nobody's around, I've done some stupid thing, get down on my knees and beg God's mercy right away. The hardest thing for most people to do is to admit they are wrong. And then even impose some penance. And then, do better. Because only in heaven will we know persons that we brought to their eternal destiny because we personally persons we've never met here on earth, we have been instruments of grace in their lives. Thank you for listening. And now we should have some questions. Try not to walk under the. If you walk around, look, walk around.